Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Senator Earl Inspector's long career could be put to an end tomorrow by Democrats with memories longer than 6 months. They remember when he used to be a Republican. Senator Blanche may find the Democrats are no longer the party of Lincoln as she runs in a primary in Arkansas tomorrow. And the candidate of Mitch McConnell and Dick Cheney may be deemed not conservative enough by Republicans in Kentucky. Here they all are. Three establishment centrists, if you will, who might lose tomorrow, but touting their centrist cred, Blanche Lincoln first.
Clearly they're targeting me and have said that, you know, I'm an example. If anybody else dare be independent and, you know, not follow 100% of the way, then they're going to get the same treatment I've gotten.
My whole career in the Senate has been one of independence. That's why they call me a rhino, Republican in name only. I voted more often with the Democrats on the big issues.
I'm not going to be the guy who's going to go up there and hold press conferences and show up on talk radio and yell and scream and make a lot of noise and vote no and not accomplish anything. I'm going to go up there, I'm going to work with Republicans, I'm going to work with Democrats when I can and get stuff done.
Senator Blanche Lincoln, Senator Arlen Specter, candidate Trey Grayson. And why is talk like that such a turnoff to so many today in the three key Senate primaries tomorrow in which the populist wings of both parties are trying to prove that they are on the rise? Let's talk to bloggers now from each of those wings. Marcos Melitzis, founder of the ProgressiveDailyCoast.com, and Scott Ott, best known for his conservative satire on Scrappleface.com, also associated with the Tea Party-friendly PJTV. And thanks to both of you for coming on. Scott and Marcos, welcome back. Marcos, welcome, Scott, to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And we'll talk about the individual races, but if Rand Paul wins Kentucky, Sestak wins in Pennsylvania, and Halter in Arkansas, in other words, if the more ideologically pure candidates prevail in both parties, Marcos Melitzis, is that good or bad or neutral for America, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure why it would be bad for the voters that support each of the parties to decide who are the candidates that they feel should best represent them in Washington, D.C. I mean, you already have a hyper-partisanized environment in D.C. You have a Republican Party that votes lockstep against Democrats 100% of the time. So you have a situation where you have partisanship, and that's good. It gives people a choice to make on Election Day.
Do you agree, Scott?
Yeah, I wouldn't totally disagree with that. And I think the bigger issue here, though, is politicians acting with integrity and standing up for individual liberty, smaller government, lower taxes, the kind of things that everybody, no matter what your political party is, really believes in when you get down to the heart of it. This is not about political parties. It's not about which, you know, team's jersey you wear. This is about who is going to do what they say they're going to do and who is going to be guarding my pocketbook better than the other guy.
But why isn't it more about which team's jersey you wear? If the Republicans who are going to be elected are more purely Republicans or more purely conservatives, that might be the jersey, the progressive and the conservative jerseys more than the Democratic and Republican jerseys, and compromise is sneered at, is that the kind of America, Scott, that we want to have?
I don't think that that's the point. I mean, there are some people like that. I agree. There are some people who think it's my way or the highway, and you're not conservative enough for me or you're not liberal enough for me. But, for example, in Kentucky, where you have Trey Grayson and Rand Paul, I mean, we've got a guy who's saying we need to spend less in Washington, but we need to fight for Kentucky's fair share. That's what Trey Grayson is saying. And basically, people understand that that fair share argument is bankrupt when you've got a federal government that's bankrupt.
Marcos, how much do you agree with your colleague here, even though you probably disagree on almost every issue?
Yeah, look, we disagree on the issues. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, we have different ideas of how to make this a good country, and we let the voters, if we give candidates that clearly define those parameters, then we give voters a real choice about what they how they should vote. But, I mean, here's the problem. I mean, the problem with Blanche Lincoln isn't that she's a centrist. I mean, there are plenty, 30 Democrats running for re-election this year. About half of them, at least, would be considered, quote, centrist. The problem isn't centrism. The problem isn't bucking the party every once in a while. The problem is politicians who are beholden and bought and paid for by corporate interest. And Blanche Lincoln is one of the absolute worst in the Senate in doing the bidding of big corporations in opposition to the will and what's best for the constituents of her state in Arkansas. And there's a reason that she's one of the most unpopular senators in the entire country. And that takes some doing, because there are some pretty unpopular senators this time of the this year. So for her to be one of the most unpopular with Democrats, Republicans, and Independents show that she hasn't been representing the state. That's why she has a spirited primary by the state's lieutenant governor. We're not talking some fringe Democrat that progressives have rallied around. This is a guy who's won statewide and who is clearly stating a vision that is more focused on the people of Arkansas as opposed to what Walmart may want or what health insurance companies may want, which has been Blanche Lincoln's problem.
Marcus, sorry to interrupt the filibuster, but I wonder if you would include big unions as part of those big-moneyed special interests.
Brian, this is your show. I'll let you ask the questions.
I'm going to let him ask you that question. Go ahead.
Special interests is big money special interests. I mean, the question is, who represents the people of Arkansas better? And I think the voters are going to make that decision. I mean, clearly the choice, Blanche Lincoln is backed by the Chamber of Commerce and big corporate interests, and Bill Halter is backed by workers. And the people of Arkansas will ultimately, only the Democrats of all of Arkansas, will ultimately make that choice in the primary.
So, Scott, hang on. Let me turn that question around on you now. Do you consider union special interests, but corporate money somehow pure?
No, I consider them both special interests. I mean, we all, at an individual level, have our own special interests, and we come together in organizations. Some are corporate, and some are nonprofit organizations that have an axe to grind, that have an interest that we want to see advanced. But the idea that somehow you can brand Walmart as a special interest, but the SEIU is just we the people, I think is absurd.
Well, Marcus, you want to take that on? Are they not equivalent?
I didn't say that labor unions are special interests. I was talking about corporate interests. And, you know, clearly I believe very strongly that corporate interests are not always in sync with those of the people of the state of Arkansas. And there's a reason that Blanche Lincoln is being funded to the tune of millions more than even the labor unions are funding Bill Halter. I mean, she's got more money flowing in that state than Halter does, because corporate interests have more money. They have more ability to twist the political process and use their resources in order to try to pervert democracy. And whether it works or not, hopefully it doesn't work.
Hang on. Let's go one at a time here. So I think Marcus did finish his answer. So, Scott, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's just patently not true, because what labor unions can do that corporations generally are very poor at doing is not only can labor unions put money into a race, but they can also put boots on the ground. I mean, corporations don't generally have great field forces where they can staff polls and phone banks and go door to door and things like that. Labor unions are a huge corporate interest in this country, and let's stop pretending that they're not.
Well, I don't want to get bogged down on this question, but corporate money can also buy a heck of a lot of boots and telephone banks, can it, when it's pooled in things like, you know, a PAC or however they decide to deploy the money?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no,
we
absolutely.
Scott,
go ahead. Whoops, did we lose somebody there?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Are you both?
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're going to talk about one group representing the people and one doesn't, then you're going to wind up corporations don't have people supporting them, then I guess the labor unions do support the people because they actually have boots on the ground.
All right. Now I want to move on to some other questions here. And listeners, okay, we are going to open up the phones, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, particularly on the populist wings of each party mounting serious challenges to either incumbents, in the case of Blanche Lincoln and Arlen Specter, or more of the establishment candidate, if you will, in the case of Trey Grayson versus Rand Paul in Kentucky. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Are you going to be happy to see the populists win in either case? Are you going to be happy to see your populist win and the other guy's populist lose because they're crazy radicals? Or how do you feel about this whole trend in American politics? Do you have a rooting interest in Pennsylvania, in Kentucky, or in Arkansas tomorrow? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Marcus Melitzis from the Daily Kos and Scott Ott from Scrappleface.com and the Tea Party-friendly PJTV, 212-433-WNYC. Or you can keep posting on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Scott, in Kentucky, what does it say about the state of the Republican Party if the candidate endorsed by Mitch McConnell and Dick Cheney there is not seen as conservative enough?
Well, I'm not a Kentuckian, so I'm not going to presume to say what it would say about Kentucky. I do think we've come to a point in our politics where we're longer...
But I ask you, what does it say about the state of the Republican Party?
Okay. Now, this is what I'm going to answer. I believe we've come to a point in the Republican and Democratic parties where the people don't need to have some hotshot politician tell them how to vote anymore. We don't look to newspaper endorsements anymore. We don't look to party endorsements anymore. We have access to all the information we need to make up our minds. And so I really don't care. I mean, Mitch McConnell may be a fine guy, but I could care less what he thinks about which guy I should vote for. If he wants to make a compelling argument as to why I should vote for Trey Grayson, then I'm willing to listen. Mm-hmm. But I've also heard Mitch McConnell basically say that he would support either candidate, and he thinks that Rand Paul has some good stuff going for him.
Right. Well, so you're speaking against the idea of sort of political celebrity endorsements determining how people should vote, and that makes sense. But with respect to McConnell in particular, the Republican leader in the Senate, is he too much of a go-along, get-along Republican himself, in your opinion?
I don't know him well enough to judge that, but I do know that there are a lot of folks in both parties who simply think, you know what, we can't risk losing this seat. Incumbents have such a tailwind, 94% reelection rate in the past anyway, that we really need to go along with the guy that we think can hold the seat. And I'm willing to take, for example, an 80% conservative over 100% conservative if the 80% guy can get elected. I mean, that's the mentality. And I think we're starting to see that fall apart because people are willing to get out there and show their support for these people who really say what they mean and mean what they say.
Marcus, how do you feel about...
Thank heavens for that, Brian, because that's the only reason that Democrats have a fighting chance of really minimizing their losses this fall. I mean, Republicans are giving us gift after gift in candidates that actually have lower chance of winning their elections than the quote, establishment candidate would have done.
Who do you have in mind there?
For one, Charlie Crist in Florida is, like, you know, example A. Now, I don't begrudge that primary challenge. I think, again, that the party should have the ability, the voters of each party should have the ability to choose their nominees. So I think I like the democratic process. But in this case, it's definitely giving us a fighting chance where the political climate should really be that for Democrats. We actually may pull some of these off thanks to Republican infighting.
Marcus, are you at all conflicted about seeing a candidate like Rand Paul, son of Ron Paul, potentially on the rise here versus a more traditional Kentucky kind of Republican? I mean, he's against the war in Afghanistan. He's against stupidly punitive drug laws and things like that that might appeal to, you know, a certain libertarian side of progressives. Are you more interested in Ron Paul than maybe Trey Grayson yourself?
You know, I look at the polling. I'm very poll-driven. And in this case, Rand Paul actually runs less well against a potential Democratic opponent than does Trey Grayson. Trey Grayson is the stronger general election Republican. So I'm actually happy to see Rand Paul win. And I think he's going to provide a very, very good contrast for the Democrats to run against.
Well, that's just a strategic answer, though, that he may be better for the Democratic candidate in that race. But what about who you'd actually rather have in the Senate if a Republican were to win?
You know, I look at it two ways. One is that Republicans are going to vote 100% against Democratic legislation regardless. I mean, they've proven that they can stick together and they will stick together and that they consider that an existential strategy is that they have to stick together. So it doesn't matter who's there. But second of all, I think Rand Paul's going to be very, very entertaining. So if for nothing else, the political theater should be a lot more interesting out of Kentucky if Rand Paul were to hold that seat.
Scott, you want to say something?
Yeah, Brian, I was just going to suggest that what Marcos just said is exactly what the people are sick to death of. They could care less about the polling, the horse race, the who's up, the who's down, and a kind of a political theater where we're more interested in the entertainment value of it. I mean, we're talking about people's lives here. We're talking about people who work for the money that they earn and then have half
don't worry,
or more of it taken away from them.
I'm 100% against Democratic initiatives. I mean, it doesn't matter who's in charge.
We're not in a situation anymore where politics can become some sort of fantasy football league for geeks.
We're going to take
I don't know who you think the polling's polling. You think that's a made-up number? Polling is polling people. This is the sentiment of the people that are being polled, the people in Kentucky. So polling isn't some abstract mid-games made-up fantasy score. I mean, the polling is a snapshot of that race at the moment. So I'm not sure why you're so outraged at the idea that polls have relevance in discussing the state of a race.
We'll continue in a minute with Scott Ott and Marcos Melitzis, and we'll start taking your phone calls when we do continue. 212-433-WNYC, though all our lines are full right now. 212-433-9692. Or get in on this on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. I'm going to be curious to hear both our guests' thoughts on Elena Kagan, whose nomination is proving to be a little bit of a Rorschach test on both left and right. Also what they both think about the TARP and the bank bailout bills. Brian Lehr on WNYC. Brian Lehr on WNYC. And by the way, here's a special message for all my Facebook friends. We have to ask you to move. Now that we're hitting 5,000 friends, Facebook requires that we convert from a friends page to a fan page. That's where we'll do all our Facebook activities from now on. So if you are a Brian Lehr friend on Facebook, please sign up as a fan on our new page, facebook.com/Brian Lehr WNYC. Once you're there, just click like. And for everyone who has not yet been part of our Facebook world, of course, we would love to have you in that community. This is the only real Facebook group for our show. Sign up at facebook.com/Brian Lehr WNYC. We continue to talk about the three primaries taking place in U.S. Senate races tomorrow, where centrists are under fire from populists in both parties. Democrats Branch Lincoln and Arlen Specter, at least he's now a Democrat, may find themselves ousted by more progressive Democrats in these primaries. And the candidate of Mitch McConnell and Dick Cheney may be deemed not conservative enough by Republicans in Kentucky. This is to succeed Jim Bunning. And that so-called establishment candidate is Trey Grayson. Rand Paul, the son of Congressman Ron Paul, is the Tea Party insurgent. And we're talking about all this and what it represents for America from both sides with Marcos Melitzis, founder of the ProgressiveDailyCoast.com, and Scott Ott, best known for his conservative satire on ScrappleFace.com, also associated with the Tea Party-friendly PJTV. Joe and Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling.
Hello, Brian. Good morning, gentlemen. I love your show.
Thank you.
That is you, Brian, of course. Thanks for taking my call. Anyway, I just wanted to say that since this is so obviously coming from both sides of the fence and is manifested in the Tea Party and all kinds of other movements, this whole throw-the-bums-out kind of attitude to me indicates very clearly that it's not these particular bums, it's the system which continues to choose the bums. And we've got a terrible system that allows so much money into politics that clearly, I mean, this should show us it's time to move towards public funding of elections and get all money out of elections. It's the system. It's not that one set or the other set of bums are bad.
Joe, thanks for your call. And Scott Ott, you were talking about corporations and unions as special interests before. Would you support Joe's idea of getting all what he sees as special interest money, and I guess that means a lot of private money, or at least a lot of big private money, whether union or corporation, out of politics?
No, I would disagree with that. And the reason for that is because we have this idea that somehow we could take special interests out of politics. And no matter what you do, I mean, McCain-Feingold legislation just proved that you can't do that. I mean, MoveOn.org will come up with a new strategy. Daily Coast will come up with a new strategy. There are ways for people to exert their free speech in this country, and there should be. And it should not be limited by the federal government. However, one of the things we could do, I think, to make the process more fair is to get legislators out of the business of being able to personally allocate funds to their home districts, and so they accumulate power. The reason why it's so appealing to stay as an incumbent in office is because you get more and more powerful as time goes on. If we take that power out of their hands, remove the earmark privilege that they have, and decentralize government so it's not all concentrated at the federal level, then it becomes much less financially interesting for people to throw a lot of money behind these elections.
Marcus, how much of that do you agree with, if any?
Yeah, I know conservatives are really obsessed with earmarks, but it's a tiny, tiny portion of the budget, and it's an oft-abused. It makes a lot of people corrupt. So I'll carry no water for the earmark process, but it's tiny. The problem, there's a couple of problems. One is there is a lot of nefarious money. I don't think you can take it out. The Supreme Court has been very clear on that. You can hopefully put some limits on it. Right now, corporations with foreign shareholders can meddle in unlimited amounts in elections. That shouldn't be possible. Foreigners should not be allowed to try to influence American elections. So this is the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. Democrats and some Republicans are trying to work ways to fix that. But second of all, I think Congress itself is broken, largely in part because of the filibuster in the Senate. I mean, right now you need, 60 votes to pass anything? I mean, what kind of – that's not democracy anymore. This is a system that allows a minority, a small minority, to gum up the works, blur the lines of responsibility for the state of things in Washington. I mean, right now you can't have a party with 59% of the Senate and 60% of the House. They cannot govern because of the obstructionist minority. So that needs to end. And to head off the potential charge of hypocrisy, I supported eliminating the filibuster when the Republicans were talking about doing so back during the Sam Alito or Justice Roberts?
Yeah, Alito, I think.
Yeah, so I actually believe very strongly that the filibuster is very undemocratic, and I want a Congress that gives clear lines of responsibility. Who is in charge for screwing things up? Right now, the Democrats can blame the Republicans can blame the Democrats, even though the Democrats don't have a functioning governing majority.
Charles in Harlem wants to comment on the Pennsylvania race. Hi, Charles.
I'm calling from Harlem. I'd be pretty happy to see Arlen Specter lose. I understand where he is in the Obama administration, and I voted for Obama. But I'm originally from Philadelphia, and I'm old enough to remember when Arlen Specter was a Democrat the first time, and then he switched to be a Republican in sort of this law and order appeal to the white working class there in Philadelphia, and I thought it was a pretty craven and callous strategy then, self-serving strategy, and now he's coming back to the Democratic Party on that same kind of move, like to save his job and to stay in power, and I really see where it's coming from if you look at the long arc of his career, and I just think it's pretty selfish, and he just wants to keep his position.
Keep
so
his,
I kind of agree with
right.
your first
just
caller
out
when
for
he
sure.
says that
yeah.
it's about the system.
Charles, thank you very much. In fact, I want to play a little bit of an anti-Specter commercial that's been running in Pennsylvania and apparently has been pretty effective. Listen to a little bit of this, and you will understand why.
For 45 years, Arlen Specter has been a Republican politician.
Arlen Specter is the right man for the United States Senate. I can count on this man. See, that's important. He's a firm ally.
But now,
my change in party will enable me to be reelected.
Ooh, and Scott, it's the way he said it.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what, I agree absolutely with the caller. And I think, I'm not a Democrat. It's the Democrat primary. And so far be it for me to tell the Democrats whom to elect. I'm a supporter of Pat Toomey, who used to be a congressman and is running for the for the Senate on the Republican side. I would love to see him face Arlen Specter. I think he would trash Arlen Specter in November. However, I think that if I were a Democrat, I'd say, you know what? Can this guy really be trusted? It's not so much that he was some sort of Republican, because he was always kind of iffy as a Republican. But, you know, if the wife you have now you got because you were cheating with her on her ex when she was married before, you're always going to wonder why she's coming home late from work. And that's the same kind of, you know, vibe that we get from Arlen Specter. Like, is he really with us?
So from a political standpoint, Marcos, you were talking about the polls before. Pennsylvania is definitely a swing state. Anybody who's followed politics over the last decade knows that. Can Joe Sestak, who's more to the left of Arlen Specter, prevail over the Republican candidate Toomey, or is it just too big a risk?
Toomey right now is benefiting from a split Democratic electorate and a primary that's gotten fairly nasty. And the polling shows that Joe Sestak actually runs much stronger against Pat Toomey than Arlen Specter. The same thing we're seeing in Arkansas. I mean, that's a hallmark of these two big primaries we're talking about on the Democratic side. It's that, yes, we're talking about more progressive challengers in those primaries, but those two progressive challengers actually run stronger in the general election.
Why would that be? Do the analysis for me on that from a progressive standpoint. Why would that be in a centrist state or at least a swing state like Pennsylvania?
Well, I mean, you're talking Pennsylvania that went double digits for Barack Obama. You know, the whole quote centrist is I know the media loves to talk about centrism without, but they never really define it. I don't even know what that means. Fact is that people in Pennsylvania clearly aren't trusting Arlen Specter anymore. They just don't know who he is. He's all over the place, and he has a real interesting habit of, and you can track his votes where he was sort of a middling Republican pre-primary, before this year. Harry Reid talked about how Arlen Specter's with us unless you really, really need him, and then he's not with us anymore. So, I mean, he put on a good show, but he wasn't really that helpful to Democrats. Suddenly, Pat Toomey enters the Republican primary, and Arlen Specter becomes the most reliable Republican in all the Senate, 100% down the line. Realizes this isn't working. I'm going to flip parties. He flips parties and starts voting 50-50 against against Obama administrations, right? He's a middling Democrat. Suddenly, Joe Sestak joins the primary, and Arlen Specter becomes the most reliable Democrat in the entire Senate, voting down the line 100% with Democratic priorities. I mean, once you do this on both sides, people start realizing this guy doesn't have a single conviction in his bones, and we don't trust him anymore.
A man with no friends left, that's for sure, Arlen Specter.
We can come together on that, Marcus. We can come together on that.
Antonia in Scarsdale, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to actually make two points. One is that I want to disagree with your conservative commentator that all of America wants a smaller government and lower taxes. I certainly don't want either of those things, and that's not the consensus viewpoint. But I also want to make a second point, and that is that I think that it's possible to confuse having a very distinct point of view with the ability to work with other people who differ from you. And I think what the voters may want is somebody like Ted Kennedy, who had a very distinct liberal point of view, but who also was pretty effective at forming allegiances and creating legislation. And so I think that's a confusion where we become involved in a horse race rather than actually, it isn't a centrist problem. It's a problem with the centrists who basically look like they're pandering instead of effectively reaching across the aisle.
Antonia, can I ask if you have an opinion about Elena Kagan?
I do, actually. It's a complex opinion, so I'll tell you, I more or less think that she has those interpersonal skills as far as I know. I'm a little disappointed that she's been a law professor for so long and hasn't written more about her own opinions. I will say overtly, I'm a liberal Democrat. I've been so all my life. But I'm a little suspicious of the degree to which she's been so goal-directed and has basically been very reticent in her work. But on the other hand, mm-hmm. If she has the interpersonal skills to actually bring people along and form allegiances that create successful opinions where she develops a majority, I think that's good. So I'm not sure.
Antonia, thank you. You probably speak for a lot of Democrats. And Marcos, I wonder how much Antonia speaks for you with that ambivalence about Elena Kagan. I don't know if you saw the analysis in the New York Times over the weekend, or maybe a similar thing elsewhere, asking the question, how would Elena Kagan have voted on Citizens United, since we've talked about that Supreme Court ruling a bit here already this morning and the influence of corporations on the political process? That ruling, of course, allows corporations and unions to spend unlimited amounts of money during political campaigns. And Kagan argued against the free spending point of view, representing President Obama as Solicitor General, but she has also written independently in the past things that indicate that she doesn't like laws that try to equalize speech, and that she may have been more on the Scalia side of that in her own thinking. What do you take from all of that, and how enthusiastic are you about Elena Kagan?
I mean, I don't know how you could be enthusiastic about Elena Kagan when there's really so little to know about her. Even, you know, what's been written about her, it's still very preliminary. And what she did as Solicitor General is really irrelevant because she was representing the administration. I mean, that was her client, in essence. So that doesn't have any bearing whatsoever on her personal views on any of those issues. So I got a wait-and-see attitude. I'm going to wait and see to the confirmation process, and I hope she gets questioned very, very thoroughly.
Might you actually come out against her at the end of those hearings?
I mean, it depends on what comes out, but you know, I'm not somebody who's going to blindly support a nominee just because it's it comes from Obama and my party's White House. I mean, I'm going to wait and see what evidence comes out, what testimony comes out. I hope she answers questions. I know there's a trend, and I suspect nothing much will change, that they don't say anything because anything they say may be used against them in,
right.
in the confirmation
sure.
process. But no,
somebody in America left with Miranda rights. Anything you say may be used against you.
But
on the question of Solicitor General and what that actually means, if President Obama hired her to represent
yes.
his points of view before the U.S. Supreme Court, presumably the person who's willing to take that job, A, and the person who the president is willing to give that job to, B, shares a lot of points of view with the president. I mean, Robert Bork was Reagan's Solicitor General, which says something. Does arguing it for the Obama administration mean so little? To follow up on your point, that's for you again, Marcos.
Okay. Well, obviously she's a Democrat. I mean, obviously she's got to, you know, have a certain level of progressivism. But the Supreme Court isn't about just broad. Is she a Democrat? Is she a Republican? I mean, the issue there's nuances to the law that matter when you're discussing major issues that are before the Supreme Court. So the fact that she was somewhat in sync with Obama says something. Does that make her 100% qualified to be on the court and 100% right on all the issues? Of course not, because mm-hmm. there may be nuances. And
right.
as Solicitor General, her job really is to represent the administration's position. So she may disagree on, say, Guantanamo Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean she can do that as Solicitor General.
Right. And so with the Marcos Melitzes of the world being less than enthusiastic, Scott, are you less than challenged and feeling, oh, my God, here's going to be another liberal to pervert the Supreme Court from the left?
Well, I'm not among those people who's stunned that President Obama has nominated a liberal for the Supreme Court. I am as concerned probably as Marcos is that we really don't know anything about this woman, and probably for different reasons than he is concerned. I mean, I've read what I can get my hands on of the papers she's written, and it's really nebulous. It's hard to pin her down.
So do you both want to change the confirmation process, Scott? Do you and want an Elena Kagan on the one hand, or John Roberts on the other hand, who certainly slid through with a similar approach to not really answering substantive questions? Do you want all the nominees from both sides of the aisle, both sides of the, you know, all the way along the ideological spectrum to really have to answer these questions on what they really think about Roe versus Wade, what they really think about Citizens United, all of these things?
Actually,
I mean,
what I'd like them to...
Scott, go ahead.
what I'd like them to really answer is questions about what they really believe about the Constitution, whether they believe it, that it's a document that should be interpreted in light of the founders' original intent, not in light of, you know, current polling numbers that come from dailycause.com, whether they really believe what the role of the Supreme Court is to be the highest court of appeal in the land, to not to declare something is constitutional, but basically to rule. I mean, it's constitutional or it's not constitutional, not because the Supreme Court says so. The Supreme Court simply declares a pre-existing fact. What I'm hoping will happen during the confirmation process is that Republicans especially will stop this ridiculous business that they do during confirmation hearings of making speeches and basically letting the nominee nod along. Let's have them actually ask questions and draw her out and find out what she really believes. The president is entitled to his nominee, but that doesn't mean he's entitled to send anybody up there and who gets a free pass without having to answer for what she believes.
Marcus, our last 30 seconds, common ground there?
I mean, the process is a process. You can't force people to say things. You can't waterboard among, you know, the Senate floor to try to get them to spill out what they really believe. You know, ideally, in a perfect world, if I had my druthers, I would remove the Supreme Court as a lifetime appointment. I would make it a 10-year or 15-year appointment. I mean, the process is what it is. It's not ideal. It's not perfect.
Marcus Melitzis, founder of ProgressiveDailyCoast.com, Scott Ott, best known probably for his conservative satire on Scrappleface.com, also associated with the Tea Party-friendly PJTV. Thank you both very much for coming on and talking all this through today.
Thank you, Brian.
And we will see what happens in those three Senate primaries tomorrow if the wings prevail. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in just a minute, we will see what we can learn from Brazil's economy for the United States economy. Think we have nothing to learn from Brazil? You may be wrong.